Well, the class giver's assignment for the next few days is special readings about Srila Prabhupada. I've chosen a section from a transcendental diary, Travels with His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada by Hari Sori Das. This is volume number 1, covers the period from November 1975 to April 1976. And I'm going to read a section of Prabhupada in India during March of 1976. That was the first year that I attended the Mayapur. My first time in India was during that time. Prabhupada was giving class every day in Mayapur. It was very nice, beautiful classes about from the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. And between the Mayapur and Vrindavan festivals, Srila Prabhupada did some pandal programs, Delhi pandal and a few other places, Modi Nagar, Aligarh, which is not too far from Vrindavan. And two busloads of devotees were traveling with Srila Prabhupada during that time. So I was one of the fortunate devotees who was on one of those buses. Shesha Prabhu was also there. So we did different programs and traveled with Prabhupada, so I thought I would read about that time in Prabhupada's life and preaching. So after the Mayapur festival, I'll begin there, March 24th, 1976. Prabhupada took the first flight to Delhi, where he was met by a small band of devotees led by Guru Das and Lokanath Swamis. Among them, surprisingly, was Chabana, the errant sannyasi from the African Yatra, now free again after his arrest at Radhakund. I don't know the story of that. But one thing, the way Hari Sori Prabhu writes, he gives a lot of background of the kinds of things that Prabhupada was dealing with. And he also has long excerpts from Prabhupada's classes, so you get a nice mix of, you really get to see what Prabhupada's days were like, the kinds of things he dealt with and his preaching. Our host for the next few days is Mr. Lakshman S. Agarwal, a short, balding man and the owner of one of India's biggest businesses, Sylvania Light Company. Prabhupada has stayed with him several times. Previously, he helped to arrange for Srila Prabhupada to meet with prominent government officials over the continuing visa problems of our American devotees. He greeted Prabhupada with a garland made of marigolds and rupee notes, then led us out to his Mercedes, which he is allowing us to use for the next few days until Prabhupada's car arrives from Calcutta. His modern two-story semi-detached house is located in the prestigious diplomatic enclave of Chanakyapuri, and is similar to what one would expect to find in a well-off western suburb. Situated in a clean, neat cul-de-sac, it has marble floors throughout and a small, high-walled backyard with a lawn. Right outside the front yard, the devotees have elected a small, colorful pandal on the road's central grassy reserve. Srila Prabhupada's room is on the ground floor, about 16 feet square. It's quite comfortable, with an attached bathroom, wood paneling throughout, and French windows opening onto the back lawn. It is furnished simply with a small wooden bed, a low desk, and an asana. The Agarwals are devotees of Krishna and have a beautiful set of 30-inch marble Radha Krishna deities. They keep the deities on the first floor of their home and worship them daily in a simple fashion. March 25th, 1976. For his morning exercise, Prabhupada took an easy walk up and down the grass reserve in front of the front street. He answered questions from his small band of listeners, Gurudas Swami, Atreya Rishi, Chabana, Pushta Krishna, Gopal Krishna, Yadubar, and myself. Yadubar queried why devotees get sick if sickness is a punishment for those who violate God's laws. Prabhupada's answer was frank. Devotees, to become a devotee is not so cheap thing. You don't think that because you have got tilak, you have become devotee. Why do you think like that? Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, Eta eka kali chela nake tilaka galaya mala. Here is another follower of Kali. He has got tilak and mala. Sahaja bhajan kachin mamu sangalaya parerwala. Eta eka kali chela. He is worshipping bhajan and taking another's wife. He is a servant of Kali. Simply he has changed his dress with tilak and mala. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if you take tilak and mala and do all nonsense things, then you are not a devotee. You are Kali Chela. To become a devotee is not so easy thing. Devotee means perfect, Atreya Rishi added. Oh yes, certainly, Prabhupada said. Devotee means he is above these material laws. That is devotee. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. He is in the Brahman stage. That is devotee. That means Sahajya, because I have got tilak and mala, I have become a devotee. This kind of cheating will not do. Shravana seemed especially interested in the topic. Prabhupada directly told him that if you do something that is forbidden, then you suffer. That is the law of karma. He said that a devotee follows Krishna's instructions. Krishna is giving the real truth, and if one takes it, he is a devotee. If one does not, he is a non-devotee. Then what is the role of mercy, Pushta Krishna Swami asked, for those who take and those who don't? Prabhupada replied that mercy means if either unknowingly or by some bad habit one does some wrong, that will be excused. But he warned that deliberate transgressions are not forgiven. Gurudas Maharaj asked what unknowingly means. Prabhupada explained, unknowingly means, suppose you are a smoker. So now you have given up everything, but in the association of some smoker you incline, all right, let me smoke. Then you regret, oh, I have done this. It can happen. So that is excused. But if you think, now I am a devotee of Krishna, I can smoke like anything, and everything will be excused, then you are a rascal. He said that the mercy of Krishna is that he wants us to come back to Godhead, even though we have no desire. If we take even one step forward, Krishna will take 10 steps towards us. Then why is there punishment and suffering, another devotee asked. If God is all loving, why does he make us suffer? Prabhupada told him Krishna loves us, but if we don't do what he says, then we must naturally suffer as the child is burnt by the fire when ignoring the advice of his father. Yet he said that suffering is also mercy, because through such experience, the soul will be purified and give up his enviousness of Krishna. So this question of freedom of jiva and control of Krishna, Atreya asked, that there is freedom, but at the same time there is no freedom, is a very fine line between the two that sometimes we do not understand. But why don't you understand, Prabhupada rejoined. Just like you belong to a free nation, America, does it mean you are free to do anything and everything? When you say, I belong to this free nation, then yes, you are free. But that does not mean that you can do anything and everything. It was a topic that devotees often debate, just how much independence does the individual soul have. Pushta Krishna pursued the point. If a person is habituated to smoking, is he free in that activity, or has he surrendered his freedom? It is like the person who smokes despite the government printing on it, a warning on the box, Prabhupada explained. One is free to do it, but not free from the results. Therefore, the living entity has minute, but not absolute independence. Like a child who is free to play, but as soon as he does something wrong, his father is there to correct him. Pushta Krishna again took it further, wanting more clarification. This idea of freedom and independence, is it possible for anyone theoretically to surrender to Krishna at any time? Yes. So let's say someone is in a very degraded condition of life, modes of ignorance and passion, his mind always disturbed. In surrendering to Krishna, is it possible that he can be independent even of the mind? You are independent of the mind always. It is your mind. You are not the mind. Then you are independent of the mind always. So even a person merged in the mode of ignorance can by some good fortune surrender to Krishna? Not good fortune, Prabhupada told us. God, Krishna, says, you do it. Here, immediately you become fortunate. There is no question of waiting for becoming fortunate. You become fortunate immediately. Suppose if I say, take this bag, $100,000. You take it. Immediately you become rich man. Why don't you take it? Understanding Prabhupada's point that even good fortune is dependent on the mercy of the Lord, Gurudas Maharaj asked how Kripa Siddhi works. Prabhupada's reaction took us all by surprise. Kripa Siddhi means that you are not willing to take this bag of money. I say, take it, take it, take it. He suddenly turned and very vigorously pushed Gurudas in the stomach as if he were trying to give him the imaginary bag. Everyone broke out laughing, and Gurudas was simultaneously astonished and delighted at the sudden abrogation of the formal guru-disciple relationship. Srila Prabhupada continued the mimicry and the pushing. He feigned resistance. No! And then began pushing again. That is Kripa Siddhi. Even you are unwilling. I give you in your pocket. Push it. That is Kripa Siddhi. There is nothing dry in Srila Prabhupada's expression of philosophy. He makes the philosophy come alive because he lives it himself. In so doing, he attracts us to use our little independence to surrender to his lotus feet. Gurudas mentioned that since we see everyone in the world as potential devotees, we should also serve them so they can become devotees. But Prabhupada clarified the distinction between showing mercy and serving others. That is not service, that is mercy. He explained that although a devotee has a mood of service, Vaishnava philosophy is that we serve the higher devotees and show mercy to the lower ones. He said the popular Mayavadi idea that one should serve everyone is wrong. This puzzled me because it says in the Shastras that the most advanced devotee sees himself as the lowest of all. So I asked, if that is so, then where is the question of the advanced devotee showing mercy to someone whom he sees as lower? Prabhupada replied that the advanced devotee does not see anyone as lower than himself, but his mood is one of sympathy. Oh, here is a person. He can be a devotee. Let me raise him to the standard. He concluded, it is duty. It does not mean he is thinking, I am higher. No. In other words, Pushta Krishna Maharaj added, he doesn't consider that he is advanced and therefore he is showing mercy to lower. Yes, Prabhupada affirmed, he is always thinking, I am lower than the worm, but Lord Krishna wants it, so let me do some service, that's all. It is simply a question of offering assistance to help another advance. Prabhupada illustrated his point through another comical exchange with Gurudas. Therefore we say Prabhu. Prabhu means, you are my master. Please order me. What can I do for you? That should be the attitude, not Gurudas Prabhu. Prabhupada said Prabhu in an exaggerated fashion with a bite of sarcasm in it. Please come here and brush my shoes. We all laughed again, perhaps recognizing something of ourselves in the parody. As he continued, what kind of Prabhu? He should say, Gurudas Prabhu, can I brush your shoes? That is real Vaishnava. There was no Srimad Bhagavatam class since most of the devotees are staying across town, either at the temple or in hotels. An unexpected visitor turned up in the afternoon, Mr. Alan Kalman from New York. He produced Prabhupada's first Hare Krishna record in 1966. He arrived with a lady friend and at long last gave Prabhupada his royalties from the record sales. They amounted to about 170,000 rupees, to which he added a personal donation of $2,000. Although he is not a devotee, it was obvious that he has great admiration and respect for Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, in turn, was very happy to see him, greeting him as an old friend. He had his guests sit while he fed them sumptuous prasadam. As they ate, Prabhupada chatted very amicably with them and would not let them go until they had eaten everything. He smiled brightly all the while, clearly delighting his guests. He is expert at entertaining and encouraging people to increase their devotional service to the Supreme Lord. In the evening, Prabhupada was invited to speak at the New Delhi Rotary Club at the Imperial Hotel. The meeting was held in a large, stately room where devotees had set up a small stage covered with a white cloth for Prabhupada to sit on. Many important people from New Delhi's social elite, as well as a half dozen GBC members, gathered to hear his powerful lecture from Bhagavad Gita 2.11. First, he explained the difference between Darwin's idea of evolution and the Vedic concept. He then extensively described the difference between the body, the soul, and Krishna. His presentation was well received, and a couple of thoughtful questions were raised at the end. Swamiji, in our ancient books, Krishna has been projected as a person who has lived for a certain period of history and who was associated with a number of friends and relatives for a temporary time. Our books of literature also projected the Supreme Being as the perfect one. How do you reconcile the two things? Your teachings are based on the assumption that that person who lived for that period of time is the perfect person. But how do you fundamentally assure that what he said is correct? How do you reconcile the two points? Prabhupada's reply was lucid and thorough. That I have already explained, that one has to understand Krishna. I have already explained that if that person, Krishna, whom you think that he lived for a certain period with friends and relatives, just like ordinary man, if you simply study what is this person, then you'll be confident. Janma karma cha me divyam yo janati tatvata. To understand him, in fact, it is not so easy. That is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Out of many millions of persons, one becomes siddha, perfect. So that perfection is not complete perfection. That perfection means aham brahmasmi. I am not this material body, I am spirit soul. So one who understands this position of oneself is calculated as perfect. But in that perfect stage, if one endeavors to understand Krishna, out of many such millions of persons who are trying to understand Krishna in perfection, one may understand. So it is not so easy. That factual understanding is possible. How is it possible? Bhaktiyamam abhijanati yavanyaschasmi tatvataha. Only through devotion you can understand. So these problems will be solved when you become a devotee. Then Krishna will reveal. You cannot understand Krishna or his name, his form, his pastimes, his activities by your imperfect senses. But when you are engaged in his service, then he reveals himself. Here I am. So this is the process. If you want to understand that person, Krishna, who is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you have to take shelter of bhakti yoga and associate with bhaktas. Then it is possible. Otherwise, not. A second man had a question about Hitler and Gandhi's philosophy of nonviolence. He said that at the time of the Second World War, Gandhi, who was also a great admirer of the Gita, a great scholar and great commentator on it, wanted not to fight Hitler, but to try to bring about a change of heart in him. He asked if that wouldn't have been more effective than punishment. In other words, he implied that Gandhi felt punishment was a fault. The man had detected that what he thought was a paradox, because Krishna instructs Arjuna to fight his enemies in the Gita, and Gandhi was for nonviolence. Prabhupada explained that Krishna does not directly punish anyone, but everyone in the material world is subject to the punishment of Maya, the material energy. This is unsurmountable. No one is excused. In other words, whether Gandhi wanted to fight or not, Hitler would still receive the karmic reactions for his activities. However, if one surrenders to Krishna, then one may avoid punishment. Otherwise, there is no other solution. That concluded the evening's proceedings, and after the Rotary members expressed their appreciation, Prabhupada returned to Mr. Agarwal's house. Due to the hot weather, Prabhupada had his bed and net set up in the backyard, where he took rest in the cool night air. Mr. Agarwal took the opportunity for his association and also had a bed and net set up alongside him. They chatted for a while before going to sleep. March 26, 1976. Today is Ekadashi. During his walk out on the front road, Pushta Krishna Swami asked Srila Prabhupada what would bring him the greatest pleasure. Without any hesitation, Prabhupada replied, "You all become fully Krishna conscious, 100% Krishna conscious. People are suffering for want of Krishna consciousness. Let them have this Krishna consciousness and become happy. That's all." Pushta Krishna asked also about Lord Chaitanya's prediction that the holy name will be spread to every town and village. He wondered to what extent that will come true. Does it mean a temple will be established in every town? Or just that preachers will travel there and tick it off as another place visited? Prabhupada told him that travel is essential, and if possible, there should be centers. He asked, why just village to village? We should go door to door. Then Prabhupada gave a short class to the few devotees present. In the verse, Prahlad Maharaj expressed the mood that Srila Prabhupada himself epitomizes. My dear Lord Nrisimhadev, I see there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are simply interested for their own deliverance, and thus, without caring for big, big cities and towns, they go to the Himalayan forest for meditating, taking Maunavrata, the vow of silence. They are not interested to deliver others. So far I am concerned, I do not wish to be liberated alone and leave aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, nobody can be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them to you, to the shelter of your lotus feet. Prabhupada said that this is the mood of one who is perfectly convinced of the efficacy of Krishna consciousness, of the Krishna consciousness movement. Those who are preaching must be convinced that without accepting Krishna consciousness, no one can be released from the stringent laws of material nature. Unfortunately, the ordinary man is a kripana, a miser, because he fails to use his human form for anything but sex indulgence, eating and sleeping. So a preacher has to be merciful. By the grace of Krishna, you have adopted such means that they may be interested a little about Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, they are so dull and miserly. They do not understand that the Krishna consciousness movement is very, very important for them. They have no sense even to understand. But the preacher who is Krishna conscious, he knows that without Krishna consciousness, these people are condemned. They cannot be happy. They cannot be liberated. They simply remain within this material world, accepting one body after another. And whichever material body we accept, it is meant for suffering. It is not meant for any happiness. Srila Prabhupada stressed the need for preaching and distributing Lord Chaitanya's mercy to everyone. So only the Krishna-conscious devotee, he can deliver them. He goes from town to town, village to village, house to house, to bring this message of Krishna and deliver him. Prahlad Maharaj is promising, I do not wish to go alone. Give me some strength so that I can deliver some of them. It is not possible to deliver them all. This is a very important engagement for a Vaishnava. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita, we can understand a Vaishnava very nicely when we see that he has converted so many conditioned souls into Vaishnava life. That is the estimation of a Vaishnava. If I simply try for myself, I may be very advanced devotee. That is not very much appreciated by Krishna. Prabhupada recalled that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati would become very pleased if one of his brahmacharis went into Navadvip and sold a few copies of his daily newspaper. Therefore, we become very much gladdened when we see that some of our books and literatures are sold. They will read and be benefited. So this is the mission of the high-class Vaishnava, how to preach Krishna consciousness among the suffering humanity. And this is the purport of this verse said by Prahlad Maharaj, and we are following the footprints of Prahlad Maharaj. Never mind, even if it is imperfectly done, we must execute the orders of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I may not be so very expert in delivering the message of Krishna, but my duty is to try to my best capacity to distribute this knowledge to the suffering humanity. It is a fact that Srila Prabhupada is absorbed 24 hours a day simply in this mood of trying to liberate as many conditioned souls as possible. His mind never deviates from it. Because of his determination, we are here now engaged in the practice of Krishna consciousness. And he constantly urges us to pursue this mood of being merciful to others as our means to perfection. Dhananjaya Prabhu, formerly the president of ISKCON Vrindavan, came to report on a new business he has set up in Vrindavan. With Srila Prabhupada's financial backing and encouragement, he is now overseeing the making of crowns and dresses for the deities. He said the business is going well. Srila Prabhupada was happy with his efforts and immediately asked him to repay the 20,000 rupees loan he gave him. This was the first day of our pandal at the Ram Leela festival grounds. It was very well attended by nearly 4,000 people. A very receptive crowd that asked many questions after Prabhupada's lecture. Prabhupada stayed to see a play by the devotees, and he was greatly pleased by the whole affair. March 27, 1976. Prabhupada was driven to the Buddha Jayanti Commemorative Park for his walk this morning. It is a spacious park with natural rocky outcrops cleverly integrated with carefully cultivated patches of bright purple shrubs and groves of frangipani, neem, and banyan trees. Spacious lawns are divided by man-made waterways and connected by small bridges and dams. Walking down the red sandstone pathways that wind in and out of clumps of bamboo, bougainvillea groves, and various types of shrubs, Srila Prabhupada discussed an idea with Mr. Agarwal to transform an adjoining 100 acres of undeveloped land into a Krishna Jayanti park. Mr. Agarwal reasoned that Sri Krishna is far more important and enduring figure in the history of India than Lord Buddha, so why not a park in his honor? Srila Prabhupada liked his idea and encouraged him to do it. After breakfast, Prabhupada held an excellent press conference wherein he spoke very strongly to reporters about the necessity of accepting the Bhagavad Gita. He emphasized how unfortunate the people of India have become. Although they have access to a wonderful spiritual culture, they are avoiding Sri Krishna's instructions, seeking material enjoyment instead. This is due to the influence of bad leaders, which they themselves have selected. One reporter asked if Prabhupada had been to see some other spiritual leaders. Prabhupada demanded to know why he should. When Krishna's words are there in the Gita, why should he pander to rascals and cheaters? It was a lively interview, with Prabhupada pointing to the lack of interest in the Bhagavad Gita as the primary cause of India's difficulties. The reporters asked intelligent philosophical questions and appreciated his forthright answers and analysis. One of them asked if a disciple had ever disagreed with him on a spiritual matter. Laughing, Prabhupada replied, "No, unless he is a fool, a damn fool." During his massage, he answered an interesting inquiry from Pranada Das, a devotee in St. Louis. He wanted to know what the Vaishnava perspective was on the Tantra Shastras. "Sometimes you cite these Shastras as reference in your books," this is the question. "Sometimes you cite these Shastras as reference in your books, yet the conclusion of Tantric philosophy and its practices appear to be quite different than Vaishnava philosophy and practices. Are they in any sense correct or authoritative? And if so, what is the explanation of worshipping God as Mother Divine, and they're engaging in disciplinary activities which promote realization through sexual interplay and other prohibitions which we observe in our Krishna society? Are these Shastras considered in pursuance of the Vedic version, reference Nectar Devotion? What is their status?" Prabhupada replied simply but conclusively, "The Vaishnava Tantras are bona fide Shastras, just like the Narada Pancharatra, but not the atheistic Tantra, which have nothing to do with the Vedic literature. The point is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is always Purusha, male, not female, Prakriti. Worship of the mother as Prakriti is not recommended by Krishna for the intelligent class of men." In the afternoon, Mr. Surendra Kumar Saigal, the owner of the Tiger Lot Company, paid a visit. He requested Prabhupada to come to Aligarh to do a program. Prabhupada immediately agreed, setting the date for March 30th. From there, he will drive to Vrindavan. Pushyakrishna Swami has also made arrangements with Balaram Das in Melbourne for Prabhupada to go to Australia on April 18th. From Australia, he will visit Fiji, Hawaii, Los Angeles, Detroit, Toronto, New Vrindavan, Washington, D.C., New York, and then London, Paris, Tehran, and then return to India. Thus, most of Srila Prabhupada's summer itinerary is now finalized. Ridha Das from South Africa finally arrived with Prabhupada's car after driving it cross-country from Calcutta. This evening, he reported that his passport and some money was missing. Chavana Swami has been seen hanging about in the front yard acting rather mysteriously. It is known that he has no money, and circumstantially it seemed he might be the culprit. Pushtakrishnaswamy confronted him straight away with his suspicions, but he calmly denied any knowledge of it. Chavana has already spoken to Prabhupada about his engagement. Prabhupada told him to simply chant and associate with devotees. Chavana appears to be very disturbed. Gopal Krishna took Srila Prabhupada to see a property he is considering purchasing for a new temple. The present facility at Bengali Market, which in any event is woefully inadequate, has run out of lease and has to be vacated. Gopal took him to a big house in a prestigious location. Some men showed him around and made various proposals, but later they turned out to be mere schemers trying to make some money as unofficial intermediaries. The site is actually owned by the American Embassy, and purchase of it can be negotiated only by a written bid directly to the State Department. Prabhupada told Gopal to go ahead and try for it. The program at Ram Lila Grounds had to be canceled today after a huge wind blew the pandal down. It was so badly flattened that it could not be erected again in time. It was a great disappointment, but nothing could be done. In the evening, there was another calamity. Because there was no program, Prabhupada stayed back in his room. He gave darshan to a few visitors. Then at 9 p.m., after everyone had left, he rose from behind his low desk to go to the bathroom. As he stepped down the few inches from the asan, the carpet suddenly slipped out from under him. He fell with a crash on the wooden edge of the seat, ending up in a sitting position on the floor. It happened in a second. Although I was seated directly in front of the desk, there was nothing I could do. Helpless and shocked, I simply looked on as Srila Prabhupada sat where he had fallen and rubbed his hip. Amazingly, he uttered not a sound, neither when the carpet slipped nor after the fall. He simply sat with his eyes closed for about 10 or 20 seconds, tolerating the pain he surely felt. Then with my help, he rose to his feet. His foot was also injured, but without comment, he walked to the bathroom. When he came out, he advised me that the carpet should be properly adjusted. But apart from this, he made no reference to the incident again. March 28, 1976. Mr. Agarwal hosted a program in the pandal in front of his house, which was well attended by his neighbors because it was Sunday morning. Prabhupada enjoyed it, and so did the devotees. We were able to perform Guru Puja and offer flowers personally to Srila Prabhupada as he sat regally on the small stage upon a nicely carved and opulently upholstered wooden seat provided for the occasion by Mr. Agarwal. Rita's passport was found discarded under a car in the driveway, but 500 rupees was missing. Chitsukananda revealed that he too had lost $500 at about the same time. Circumstances seemed to indicate Chavana as the possible culprit, so Pushtakrishnaswamy searched his belongings. He found a savings book from a Seattle bank with a deposit entry of $23,000 in it. He showed it to Prabhupada, who said that the matter should be handled discreetly. Considering the delicacy of the situation, Prabhupada called Chavana in. Not wanting to directly accuse him of any wrongdoing without proof, he began by preaching to him and helping to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. He then suggested that if he had any money, he might like to help with the purchase of a house here in Delhi. Chavana said he would be glad to help, but he had no funds. Prabhupada then called for the passbook and showed it to him. When Chavana saw it, he laughed and explained that it was all false. He faked it in order to show customs officials in Africa that he had sufficient means to support himself while in their country. Prabhupada turned to Pushtakrishnaswamy, who agreed that it could very well be. So Prabhupada laughed and said, "You made it to cheat the karmis, but now you are cheating us." He therefore let the matter drop, and Chavana left. Because of economic hardship everywhere in India, the incidence of thievery by low-class persons is very common, and even in our temples it is fairly frequent. Even though condemnable, it is somehow understandable. But later Prabhupada made a telling comment, "I thought it was just the Indians, but now the Westerners are stealing as well." He is disgusted with the behavior of his wayward disciple, Chavana. He told me very frankly, "This is why my godbrothers criticize. These men come and insist, 'Give me sannyas, give me sannyas.' Why? What is the attraction? Then when they have it, they again fall down. One becomes a first-class thief and woman hunter. Another goes back to his wife. What is the use of such sannyas? Chavana is intelligent and was doing nicely in Africa. Now he is a third-class thief. Rishi Kumar was such a nice brahmachari and sannyasi. I was expecting him to do something wonderful. Now he is a demon." The Ram Lila grounds, Pandal, resumed this evening and was a big success. After an excellent lecture by Srila Prabhupada, over 8,000 rupees worth of books were sold. The audience sat entranced as the devotees staged a drama called The Entrance of Kali. Prabhupada stayed to watch the play and truly enjoyed it. A newspaper printed an excellent article today, the result of yesterday's interview. Prabhupada was happy with it because the reporter had accurately noted his main theme. The headline read, "Krishna Forgotten in the Land of His Birth." So I'll just read one more short section. March 29, 1976, Modi Nagar. Early in the morning, Srila Prabhupada went by car to Modi Nagar, a small industrial town founded by the Modi family. They are well known throughout India for cloth and other manufactured goods. It has six colleges and a huge factory complex. A notable feature is a grand Lakshmi Narayan temple compound, built from red sandstone with three large steeple-like towers set back from the road across a broad open courtyard. Prabhupada was met in the front of the temple by the widowed Mrs. Modi and a large crowd of our devotees. After paying his respects to the deities and taking a tour of the marble complex, he gave a short talk in a back room before going to the Modi mansion, where we will reside until tomorrow. The mansion is situated on several acres of land and enclosed by a high wall. The house is quite dark and seems to lack personal warmth, but the reception was quite cordial. In the evening, Prabhupada returned to the temple lecture hall and gave a long discourse to a crowd of some 2,500, the majority being women and children. After an exuberant kirtan, he spoke for about an hour. The Vyasa-san was one of the most spectacular we've seen yet. In shape, it looked almost like a silver spaceship, and it was detailed with flowered patterns and bright colors. On his return to the house, Mrs. Modi gave Srila Prabhupada 1,000 rupees as dakshina. There's a couple of things I remember about this particular engagement. First, in the afternoon, we arrived before Prabhupada, and I remember we saw this Vyasa-san, and we thought it was really strange. It was hammered silver, but it turns out, you see it in pictures now, it actually looks quite nice. Another thing happened when Prabhupada sat to sing Jayarada Madhava when he was going to give the class with the devotees. He didn't have any kartals, so Hari Sori or someone else was with him. Said, "Does anybody have any kartals?" And I had some kartals, but the straps were dirty, so I didn't dare to give them to Prabhupada. Ever since then, I've always wondered whether I've made the right decision or not. Another thing I remember that lecture was at the end of the lecture. It was the first time I'd heard Prabhupada do something like this. When he said the Jai Om prayers, he also said, "Modi family ki jai." Sometimes devotees do that kind of thing. That was the first time I'd ever heard Prabhupada do that. So we'll stop here and we'll continue with this kinds of readings tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.